This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Prostrated at the altar of balanced budget, sacrificing Social Security, Medicare, and economic recovery.
And now we move to a situation that scares me a lot. The Simpson-Bowles Deficit Reduction Commission established by the president is poised to deliver, I think, an attack on Social Security and Medicare dressed up in the sanctimonious rhetoric of deficit reduction. The Obama administration's spending freeze is another sacrifice to the deficit gods. But the deficit phobia of Wall Street, the press, some economists, and practically all politicians is one of the deepest dangers that we face.
And it's not just the old and the sick who are threatened. We all are. To cut federal budget deficits without first rebuilding the economy is a sure path to stagnation, to a double-dip recession, even to a second Great Depression. We speak with James Galbraith, Lloyd Benson Chair of Government Business Relations at the Lyndon Baines Johnson School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas at Austin.
I want to begin by, I'm still not convinced, and I really draw on your knowledge, and that is the question of, is the Social Security system running dry? Is there such a crisis and catastrophe that we need to panic?
There's no crisis at all in Social Security. Social Security as a system provides a very modest living for American working families, working people who have earned their benefits and who have a right to be maintained out of poverty in their retirement. But more than that, Social Security fundamentally is an insurance scheme. And what it does is it protects old people whose families would not otherwise support them, who don't have families to support them. And it imposes a payroll tax on workers whether or not they have families to support. So you can think of it as distributing the burden of protecting and maintaining our elderly population over the entire working population, and including all of the elderly who need protection. And the problem with cutting Social Security is that it would expose, some people would be all right, people whose families would support them, people who have independent means, and wouldn't be bothered by this. But there would be a great many people who aren't in that position and who would suffer very grievously. And that is the element that's missing in this discussion. The problem in Social Security is certainly not to balance what is being paid out in benefits with what comes in through the payroll tax. There's absolutely no necessity for that, and there's no fiscal necessity, no economic necessity for it. The problem in Social Security is to maintain the elderly population out of poverty.
Now, this deficit commission seems to be sort of stacked to attack Social Security, but Simpson and Bowles have made statements and actions in the past that have attacked Social Security. Is this something that's been constructed to attack Social Security? Is this just something that's developed from the natural course of things?
Well, it's certainly clear that Alan Simpson, the former senator from Wyoming, who has a long record on these issues, is a lifelong opponent of Social Security and Medicare. And for him, this is a tremendous opportunity to ride the wave of hysteria about deficits. And to achieve a very long-standing goal of cutting Social Security and Medicare. Erskine Bowles, who's the Democratic co-chair, also has a history of alliance with the interests that would like to privatize the Social Security system. He was chief of staff in the Clinton White House at a time when this was being actively considered in that Democratic administration, unfortunately. It didn't happen in 1998 or so, in part because of President Clinton needed the support of progressives in his well-known political troubles. And it didn't happen in 2005 when George Bush attempted to put it through. But the same forces have regathered, and they are now using the Bowles-Simpson Deficit Reduction Commission as their vehicle for achieving what they couldn't achieve through the political process in the last 10 years.
Professor Galbraith, I just want to go back. I was merrily enjoying somewhat better weather in New York this weekend. Picked up the New York Times, looked at the business section, and there was a calculation of how bad my benefits would be from Social Security, if they existed at all, based on my age. And it, again, threw, I kept thinking about Scrooge saying, what, are there no workhouses, etc. It was quite frightening. So I just want to push a little bit further on their insistence that, and they had different benchmarks by 2012 and 2035, it will run dry. Now, if this is indeed a political statement and not a fiscal reality, how do we break it down further? And aside from the public's desire to save Social Security, how do they really grasp the fact that it is a political attack and not a fiscal imperative because of the deficit?
Well, okay, let's separate out some of the issues. There's the deficit of the U.S. government as a whole. That is the only issue which this particular commission is actually charged with discussing. It has no business discussing any other issues. If you can read its charter, the charter is on the website. The charter makes no specific mention of the balance of the Social Security Trust Fund. That is not actually part of this commission's mandate. However, it looks as though they are going to go there, and they are talking about that issue. Is it in any way important that the benefits being paid by Social Security, which are now very much less than tax revenues, at least up until this year, that they might be in some future year greater than the tax revenues that are being earned, paid to the government in that particular year? The answer is absolutely unimportant. The U.S. government has commitments. It writes the check. The check is written on the U.S. Treasury. Your bank will honor that check whether the payroll tax revenues in total that year match the benefits or not. So there is just no, unless the Congress changes the law to link the two in a specific way, there's simply no economic necessity that they be linked. There is no well. It cannot run dry. Social Security payments can be paid so long as the Congress directs that they be paid. So this issue is a pure red herring, and if the Deficit Commission takes it up, it's really the sign of a runaway commission, because, as I say, the charter of the commission is to talk about the deficit of the United States government as a whole. And then that's an issue which is worth discussing, but one has to ask, why is it that the deficit of the United States government as a whole is as large as it is? And the main answer for that is that we're in a deep economic slump. We have a very high rate of unemployment, and there's been a very steep fall in tax revenues overall, simply because of the collapse of economic activity. And that's an issue, again, we'll have to ask, is the Deficit Commission going to deal with that issue in a clear and effective way? So far as we know, based upon how they've discussed the issue so far, they're not even going to consider it. They're going to simply assume that it goes away in the next few years, which it certainly is not going to do.
Do we need deficits right now to get out of this economic quagmire we're in?
Well, the deficit right now is inevitable. It is a function of the fact, it's a result of the fact that tax revenues have declined sharply and that expenditures on unemployment insurance, disability, food stamps, and other forms of relief, as well as the stimulus package, have gone up. So it's an inevitability. You can't escape it. The question for us right now is, could we be doing more than we are to generate economic activity and help people be in a position to pay more taxes because there are any more income? And the answer to that is, yes, we could be doing a good deal more. And so from that point of view, an active policy, which would in effect, let's say, pay state, give, write checks to states and localities so that they can keep teachers and firemen and police on staff and keep their parks and their libraries open, that would be a substitute for paying unemployment insurance benefits to exactly the same people after states and localities had laid them off. And it would be a much better solution, of course.
Well, it seems to me that the issue, which is a classic progressive position, would be stop funding the wars. Definitely don't expand and continue the Bush tax cuts. But notwithstanding that, how much should I be concerned about the issue of deficit? I am a, well, should we be concerned? You said the U.S. government can write its own checks. So deficit spending, what's the big deal?
Well, what I said about that is not just my opinion. It's a simple fact. The U.S. government writes checks and banks cash them and we all use the resulting money. So it's that's just the way the world works. I think it's a mistake, though, to treat the expenditures on the wars in particular as though they were deeply tied up in the deficit question. We should judge those expenditures on their own merits. And if we're not accomplishing anything important or achievable in Afghanistan, if we're caught in a quagmire there, then we should make that judgment and terminate that engagement for that reason, not because it's costing us, let's say, too much money, but because people are getting killed unnecessarily and we're not accomplishing our objectives. And I think it's important to be fairly rigorous about this matter. If we're in a situation in which, because of the condition of the economy, we're running a big deficit, the question we should ask is, what's the most effective way to restructure our economy in order to get out of this mess? And the problem with the Bush tax cuts, again, is not the size of the tax cuts, but the fact that they basically went to augment the incomes of people who were already very wealthy. And we would do much better if we expanded the relief that's been given in effect on the payroll tax, because the payroll tax is a very large tax paid by working families, and it comes out of their first dollar of earnings. And it, if to the extent that one can rebate that through the income tax or directly, what one does is you permit people to, it makes it easier for them to pay their mortgages and their car payments. And that's directly useful for the productive economy.
Do we need even bigger deficits? Do we need something like a Reconstruction Finance Administration that, like in the Great Depression, to pull us out of this great recession?
Well, the Reconstruction Finance Corporation, which was originated under Herbert Hoover and then transformed under Roosevelt to become a truly effective instrument of corporate finance. It funded all of the major companies in America through the Great Depression, kept them alive, companies like GE and RCA and A&P. That kind of activity, which I think would be, in fact, be very useful, would not be counted as part of the budget deficit under normal rules, because it would come from, these would be loans coming from an entity which is, let's say, a government-sponsored corporation. And that's what the Reconstruction Finance Corporation actually was. So I think the lesson here is that the economy needs to be powered forward by two engines. One of them is the public sector, and in contrast with the Depression, we have a much larger state and local government sector now than we did then. It's much more capable, can do many more useful things. So that would be a good place, a good way for the public sector to support economic activity. And we ought to have credit financing available for the private sector, not only to provide loans to major corporations, but also to provide support for new forms of economic development. We have major energy problems. We have a vast environmental challenge. We ought to be setting up institutions that over 10, 15, 20 years can bring resources to bear on those problems. And those institutions ought to be free of the normal budget process of the Congress. It ought to be something that we get going, that's continuing, and that businesses can have confidence in, that they can continue to get funding from those sources for as long as the problems are there to be worked on.
Professor, what I don't understand politically is Social Security certainly is an enormously important and popular program that was instituted. It helps certainly in a reformist way rationalize the society. It is a point of departure for some of the most impoverished countries in the world. So given what you're saying, why in the world is there this tirade and this fear that is being generated about the Social Security system and any kind of an attack on it?
Well, Social Security has had since the beginning its political enemies. Insurance companies typically haven't liked it because it competes with their market for what they see as their market for life insurance. Brokers and fund managers would like to get their hands on money that now is paid in the payroll tax and supports Social Security. They would like to be in a position to have more people coming to them placing their savings with them so that they can earn the fees. They would like very much to have the Social Security funds channeled into the private market and support the price of common stocks. So the financial sector has had this enormous urge to cut Social Security, to privatize Social Security, to reduce its importance for many years, and it's mainly financial self-interest.
And just to build on that, but we're coming to the close, so this has to be really short. What is the impetus? Who gains from this deficit mania that we have right now? Who's behind this? What's behind this?
Well, in two words, it's a traditional preoccupation of Wall Street, and it has to do with the balance between the public sector and private financial power. And Wall Street gets two things. It gets a larger share, increase in its influence over the economy, and it also gets a distraction from the issues that are still unresolved in the financial crisis, which was largely due to Wall Street's own misfeasance. And so long as we're talking about deficits, we're not talking about the fraud that in the financial sector, the vast fraud, the largest swindle really in the history of the world that brought us the financial crash and the very weak economy that we have now.
Professor, I hope we can get you back to continue to look at this issue and a number of others in our economy, not the least of which is the unemployment situation, which seems at best stagnant and at worst actually growing.
Happy to come back.
Excellent. And we have been speaking with Professor James Galbraith, who is with the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas at Austin. And thanks for sharing your insights into this critical situation.
Protect them from the view of the people wearing dirty rags and begging for their food while they're serving up a banquet for the membership inside. The poor man on the bottom's contemplating suicide, 'cause he feels worthless. His hunger pains beyond belief. There's no relief. We're gonna bring back Coxie's army and take his message to the street.
A broad coalition of groups has been formed to defend Social Security. Of all the ideas proposed, this one comes from Gerald McEntee, president of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A new reality show starring the people who want to cut Social Security. And now, Gerald McEntee.
When will they learn? In 2005, George W. Bush, now clearing brush every day in Texas, went to, and you may recall this, I hope you do, went to 60 cities trying to sell his Social Security privatization plan to the American people. But the more he traveled, the more he talked about it, the less people liked it. At the same time, his poll numbers kept going down. It got so tough out there for Bush that he stopped. But we wanted him to go to all 60 cities. In fact, AFSCME even offered to pay his way to go. He never understood that Americans, they like Social Security. They count on it. That's why his plan was DOA dead on arrival. Now, some of the same crowd on this fiscal commission and in Congress want to bring back the Bush plan. Are they for real? They're actually talking about privatizing again. Some of the Senate candidates, that poor woman from Nevada, they want to change the benefit formula. Worst of all, they want to raise the retirement age. Now, can you picture, if you would, just looking out this window, all the 70-year-old bricklayers, trash collectors, firefighters, nurses out there, 70 years old. And what kind of society do we want? Social Security supports itself with payroll contributions. It has no borrowing power. It currently has, and some people would be surprised at this, a $2.6 trillion surplus. Doesn't add a penny to the so-called deficit. The real issue is all the money that was spent in the Bush years, the tax cuts for the rich, the two wars, the bank bailouts, none of it paid for. All the money borrowed, much of it from Social Security itself. The politicians who borrowed funds from Social Security now want to renegotiate the deal. Maybe they just don't want to pay it back. We're not going to let them get away with it. Here's my plan. It's a new reality TV show. It stars John Boehner, the tan man, Alan Simpson, Peter G. Peterson, Wall Street billionaire, and Erskine Bowles is in on it too. We give each of these guys an average Social Security benefit of $14,000 and tell them to live on it for a year. They won't get a COLA, but they'll still have to deduct $100 a month for Medicare Part B and pay $200 a month for Medigap insurance. When do you think they'll stop calling for benefit cuts? Probably in the first episode. Thank you. I wrote that myself, as a matter of fact. Didn't I, Steve?
Yes.
Yeah. We have anything in here that's funny, I wrote it. We have a message for the commission. Don't turn Social Security into the scapegoat for the deficit. Social Security is not the problem. Don't raise the retirement age. Don't tamper with the COLA. If you break the promise that was made to America's working families 75 years ago, we will hold you accountable. We took on Bush, and we not only won, we crushed him. We'll fight this just as hard. Keep your hands off our Social Security.
The Return of Coxey's Army was written and performed by Eddie Starr.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.